You're listening to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. I'm your host, Amy Stone. Here, I share stories from real people navigating the adventure that I call adulting. Are you ready? Me too. Let's do this. Hello, friends. How are you? Before I introduce you to my guest, I want to share a little bit of something, a little something. So this is the 36th interview that I'm doing for this show. That's super fun. When I came up with the concept for the show, a show about choices and changes and how it impacts the path of our lives, I was really excited about it. What I'm learning is that a lot of people who are interested in being guests about the show do want to talk about things that I would categorize as career changes or reinventions. And I think that that's fun. It's really interesting to me that that is a topic that's coming up over and over again. And I think that's really nice because I think that for a lot of people, this is something that we do sometimes more than once. So anyway, in this episode, I'm going to introduce you to my new friend, Nathaniel Ramsey. He has the potential, you guys, to be a very big hit at elementary school career days because he picks very cool jobs. Are you ready? Let's do this. Nathaniel Ramsey, welcome to The Art of Imperfect Adulting.
Hi, thank you for having me.
I'm so happy you're here. Are you ready for a fun chat?
I am.
That's great. All right. So I begin every interview, most interviews, by asking people to share with me where they are in the world. So where are you talking to me? What part of the country are you talking to me from?
I'm in Charleston, West Virginia.
Charleston, West Virginia. Very nice. Very nice. All right. So before we dig into the topic of the day, I'd love to learn a little bit more about your background just as a person. You know, what do you do outside of work? Who are the important people in your life, people you live with, your pets, your hobbies, anything as much or as little as you want to tell us about your outside of your job?
So outside of my job, I spend a lot of time with my kid. I have a son. He's coming up on 2 years old, and my wife. So outside of work, I spend as much time with them as I can. They're really kind of the light of my world right now. So two is very cute. He's a lot of fun right now. He's getting to that age where he's walking and talking. So that's what I look forward to every day.
Does he sleep all the way through the night?
So yep. He sleeps like 12 hours a night. So I feel very blessed in that realm.
Yeah, no, that's very good. It's like, but then you get the interruptions. It's like you get into a habit, a false sense of security, and something will happen, you know, the flu.
I think he just started having nightmares recently, just little ones. They go away pretty quick, but you know, that's that false sense of security kind of coming back a little bit. So
I would love to tell you that it gets better, but they become teenagers and then they're just up at night.
That's what everybody tells me. So I'm looking forward to hopefully a couple more years before I get there.
Oh, you've got some time. You've got some time. All right. So you have no way of knowing this because this is the first conversation we've had, but I actually have a cool job theme going on in my interviews today.
Okay.
And so that's a lot of fun for me. But we're going to talk about career change, and we're going to talk about your job. You, at one point, I think you were a musician.
Yes, I was a professional violinist living in Charleston. I technically had the title of artist in residence string educator with the West Virginia Symphony Orchestra.
That is like so cool.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. I taught in 7 different schools at one time, just kind of traveling around and teaching 4th grade through 12th grade string instruments. So we would take students who had never touched or seen a violin or viola or cello and teach them about the orchestra and how to incorporate that into their curriculum.
So we have a connection. My oldest stepdaughter was a cellist, and
okay.
I met her when she was 8, and she was already playing the cello. She started on violin in the little peewee, but that was before my time. And I just have to say that I have a special place in my heart for anybody living through the experience of a new string instrument player, because it is a special, special kind of torture. And you want to be this like really, really passionate, like, you know, believe in the music and go, but it really is like living with a dying cat. And many, many years later, several children later, one of the kids was doing a music performance that was not strings, but there was a strings element, an elementary school strings part of the performance. And my husband and I were applauding for the very small strings players. One of the other parents was like, "Oh, do you have somebody playing strings?" And we were like, "No, but we remember. We remember."
Yep. It does eventually pay off, but it's one of those things that takes many, many years for them to get
Yeah.
better to.
No, yeah. Yeah. I mean,
Yeah.
we were, I think she was on like a quarter size cello, which is just only marginally bigger than a violin. So even if you're
Yeah, that's pretty
very
small.
good, it still doesn't have the beautiful range and skills and all the fun things. So that's an amazing, that though, that is an amazing job. That is an amazing job. Now we're gonna, I like to talk to about people about choices and changes, and you are somebody who's gone through that. At some point, you made a choice to step away from that, to actually go from what I would describe as one cool job in the symphony to another cool job. So tell us what you decided.
Yeah, well, I'd always wanted to fly. So even in high school, I looked up trying to see if I could get flight lessons or something. And there was a rumor going around my hometown that if you wear glasses, I wear glasses, that you were not allowed to fly. So I just kind of blindly believed it and didn't really look too much more into it. Went to college, got a degree in violin performance, and was working for the symphony and kind of attained what I would consider at the time a dream job with the
Yeah.
symphony. I'd always wanted to do what I was doing with them, and I loved it. It was a lot of fun. Got to work with a lot of kids. Every year we put together a program of 300 to 500 kids and had a huge like end of year concert with all the schools and stuff. It was a lot of fun. But I always wanted to fly. And when I was in high school, I worked for a family that had a little airport and airplane, like helping strap people into a biplane. It was a ride business, giving people tours, and just really liked it a lot. Fast forward to after college, I decided to look it up finally. It took me, almost 10 years to finally look it up and realize, oh, that's not true, regarding the glasses thing. I can go fly. So I signed up for flight lessons literally the next day. Like, I'm not even kidding. It was probably 12 hours later. I called the local flight school and said, hey, I want to take flight lessons. And then just to see if it was something I could do, I went and started training under what they call Part 61. And quickly discovered I really like this. I really like the structure of it. It fits me really well. And so kind of self-paced my way through about 3 months, 3 to 4 months, and got my private pilot's license just to kind of make sure, yep, this is something I wanted to do. And this is all pre-COVID. So during that time, I was also doing a little bit of research, finding out that the industry was short on pilots. There was going to be a big need for pilots. I also like teaching. So we'll get back to that in a second. But so to kind of present it to my wife, because this is a huge business, I had a successful career. I could have just stayed in it and be like, hey, let's go do something completely different that
Yeah.
we know nothing about. So I had to do a lot of research and say, hey, this is where the industry is going. I would like to start pursuing this, and I think it could pay off in the end, and it would be worth it.
So yeah,
Luckily.
so you were, 'cause you were working for the symphony, which is like a salary job. You were not a freelance musician who was doing gigs.
It was
So
kind
there
of
was
an
some
hourly job.
stability.
It wasn't,
Okay.
didn't have benefits. That position did at one point, but when I was there, it didn't. It had kind of downgraded, but I was happy to be there when I was there because I helped kind of regrow the program to be a lot bigger. And they were, when I left, kind of rediscussing it. I don't know if they've decided to bring that back or not since then.
And then, so you were doing private flight lessons. What was the first round of the job? You wanted to be a like a private pilot for what type of planes?
Really just to be paid to fly airplanes. So there's
Okay.
different levels.
There
So
are
private,
different levels.
yeah. So private pilot is somebody who is just licensed to fly an airplane. It can be like a Cessna or a
Yep.
Cirrus or something like that. In order to be paid to do it, you have to go through, generally people go through an instrument rating that lets you fly through clouds. And then a commercial rating, which lets you be paid to fly an airplane, but that doesn't mean you're going to fly a jet. So you can do things like sightseeing tours and skydiving, things like that. And then beyond that, you can go into a CFI, which is Certified Flight Instructor, a Certified Flight Instructor Instrument, Multi-Engine Instructor, and things like that. So flying airplanes with two engines. I wanted to go the instructor route. So I did some research and found some schools that advertised quickly going through the program. And this is how crazy I was looking at it. I found a school, I believe it was in Germany, that advertised you could work for them after getting your licenses, but you would have to train in Utah or Arizona. I don't remember where out west. And I was contemplating moving to Germany, so that I could get established with them, moving back to the US and then moving back to Germany.
You were really all in on the
I was
research
really all in. I
training.
was committed to doing it because I've always thought living abroad would be really fun. And that at that time of my life, I was still heavily considering it. So it wasn't that far outside the realm of possibility for me.
How long ago was this?
5 years ago.
Okay, 5 years ago. All right. So I knew there were different levels of being able to fly a plane. There's, being able to, the little planes. I live down in South Florida where people will have little planes that they'll fly like down to Key West and stuff like that, or across. And that's a very different thing than people who are flying commercial jets. I
Yeah.
had a neighbor who was a charter jet pilot. Like, so he had clients that like did that. That was a whole thing. So I knew that there were different levels of knowing how to do it. I did also, I will say that I did I had heard a version of that rumor about the eyesight. I'd never
Yeah.
questioned it. I never questioned it, and I'd never thought about it. I mean, I see pilots wearing glasses, so it wasn't something I'd put a lot of thought into, but I definitely had heard a version of that rumor that you had to have
Yeah, that
good
rumor just
eyes.
kind of implanted itself, and I just never thought anything about it. And it took me
You
5, 10 years
because
to.
it does, it passes the common sense test. We do want our pilots to be able to see,
You do, yeah.
you do. It is one of the things where I put a lot of faith in them knowing what they're doing, and I value the people who train them. So my impression of flight training, from the people who I've known who've done it, who've done started and gone to like ride-alongs and things like that, is that it is a process. It takes some time, and also it's not a discount event. It's not a, it can be expensive to go through and learn how to fly. So how, when you started this, you were thinking about going to Germany. How long did you think it would change to, that it would take, and how were you still working? Like, how are you going to do this?
Well, I looked at all kinds of different options because I already had a degree and
Yep.
I wasn't really interested in getting another degree. I just wanted to start working and
Okay.
start teaching again. So I started looking at it kind of from that point of view and looked at what's going to be the fastest way to get me from point A to point B.
Yeah.
So if it involved moving overseas and then coming back, luckily I found a flight school that was pretty close on the East Coast. That advertises really, really fast going through their program. I believe it was 4 months and 2 weeks to the day, I think. I have to go back and check, but it was very close, 4.5 months from completing instrument through multi-engine instructor at that flight school.
Wow.
So I was able to finish all my ratings in a very short amount of time. And so knowing that, I made the decision to just stop working. I kind
Okay.
of left the symphony. I said, hey, it's been a great time, loved it here. I'm gonna pursue this. So we moved and did that. And then I sat around for like a month afterwards and ended up getting a job at a flight school and helping them out for a little while. And kind of almost it wasn't an assistant chief position, but for all intents and purposes, it was very similar in what we did. It was called a program manager. And so I
Okay.
managed like a section of the flight school. And had, I believe it was 8 to 12 CFIs under me at the time there.
Okay, so the, not only flying, but also teaching other people how to fly. What were the parts of the training process that maybe surprised you along the way? It surprises me that you could do it that fast.
You can do it that fast. You have to be dedicated and committed to it. Like it's you have to just embrace the lifestyle change from the beginning. Otherwise, it's not going to work out.
Okay.
I think the biggest thing for me, I remember this distinctly, was that things in aviation are pretty black and white. So in the music industry, we have a lot of things like, do you feel a certain way? How do you interpret it? There's a lot less of that in aviation. It's just this or it's
Okay.
this. A lot of
Breathe.
the questions are very simple, very black and white. So for me, when I realized that, my instructor told me that. He said, look, just believe it. That's just how it's going to be. When he told me that, that helped me accelerate my learning and understanding because I can just go with it. Now, farther along, there is some interpretation stuff when you get into the legal side of things, but we'll save
But
that for.
generally, why the planes stay up in the air and what to do in certain
Yeah.
situations, that's a do as I say and don't question the deep meaning behind the question.
Yeah, we can do a lot of, I like to call it pre-thinking. So what pilots
Pre-thinking,
do
okay.
now is When we go out to fly, we know exactly what we're going to do on that flight. We've done the pre-flight, we've done the pre-flight planning. Everything is known from the time we start the engine to the time we shut it down. There's a legal requirement to it. There's just an obligation, kind of morally, to do it, to make sure that we
Yeah.
know what we're doing while we're on the plane. So when we spend all that time on the ground thinking about what's going to happen next and how we're going to go about this process, when we get in the air, we're not really surprised by unusual events, if
That
that
is a
makes
very
sense.
good thing. No, I'm all about not being surprised about things that happen on the airplane, really. So you're not quite there to where you've got somebody who's in school, but in elementary school, you might remember they do the career day, bring the adults come in, right? I gotta say, you're a candidate for two very cool jobs. Musician, pilot, those are popular choices on bring your kid to
They're kind of
bring.
opposite ends of the spectrum too,
They
so.
are. I love this because they are. They're so very different. I once one of my kids went to school, and one of the parents came, and they were a fireman, and they brought the fire truck and completely staged up every other parent that showed up that day in school. But pilot is definitely up there. So you shared this that when you were in high school, you worked on somebody's flight business. Like you were doing something with like a ride along program. How, like, what's the earliest you remember being curious about flying?
Actually, there's a video. Way back in the day, I think I was probably 4 or 5. We were at the beach, and this is way before there were like headsets and stuff in the airplane. So you're yelling at each other the whole time. You're just this really old airplanes. In the video, they had one of those giant camera things they put on the shoulder, and you can see me in the video. And I said, "I'm going to be a pilot one day because I want to." Like I guess I've just always known it, even
That's
from
amazing.
very, very little. So I think it's kind of funny that it's come full circle now from f 4 or 5 years old to now in my 30s.
I think that's very interesting. I really do. And I th so then I have another question, because music is it was your career. And in order to get to where you got in music, which I did not know before we started the interview, but you had to be dedicated and passionate about the study and the instrument. But music is like a lifetime thing. Do you still play? Do you still interact with the music community in your town?
I do periodically. I'll take a gig here and there. I don't practice as much as I did. I will admit that. I probably should, but I just don't because I've completely switched careers now. But I do try to stay with it a little bit. My sister and I, she plays cello, by the way.
Okay.
We were discussing setting up a little concert thing, a concert series at some point, and playing like the Brahms violin cello trio with the piano.
Well, absolutely. And I have a friend who is long retired, but she gets called out to people. Even when people are getting married, they'll bring her up, and she's like, okay, fine, I'll come and do that, because it's something she still enjoys.
It's still fun. What's nice about it now is it's not, I don't have to rely on it as my
Yes.
only source of income, so I can enjoy it a lot more.
Well, there's a life lesson in there for some things, right? When you started with music, do you come from a musical family? Was music a pattern in your family?
Kind of. I mean, we grew up in music. It was always around us. My mom, she sang a lot. My dad played trumpet in high school, but he wasn't playing at all by the time we were around, so.
There is a thing when you're passionate about something, it seems like the next step is to turn it into your career or your business. And it's not always a great thing. There's many, many people with stories of taking something they really, really love as a hobby, and the minute it becomes their business, they lose the joy in it. And so that's definitely something that happens because it's different. It's different. And flying, there was a risk of that too. You could have gotten in there and been like, oh, well, I only actually like this when I do it for fun. But it turns out you like to teach it and do it. How much flying time do you get these days? Do you do a lot of flying?
I do, yeah. It depends on kind of the weather and the days. I go through periods of high flying and sometimes not a lot of flying. I'm an assistant chief, so I'm not technically a line instructor. I have, I think it's 12 instructors underneath me. I know it sounds like I should know that number, but we just changed it a little bit. So if I have a time when I have a lot of students, then I'll fly a bunch. I'll be in the top three in terms of hour producing. I love flying. You can't beat the view. It's the best office in the world. So.
That's amazing. That's amazing. So I actually get to talk to a lot of people about career change, because It's interesting that it's something that a lot of people go through. It's something that most of us are not prepared for, at least the first time it happens, right? And I'd love to have these conversations. I'm curious whether or not you remember where there's like one particular moment when you were like, all right, this is it, I'm changing, or whether or not it was a gradual thing
Oh, it
that
was very
came
much
up.
just we're changing because
We're
it
changing.
involves moving multiple states away, completely abandoning a career that was already set up and successful, and saying, you know, we're going to leave that behind and just do something completely different.
Okay, so the first person you said told was your, it sounds like was your spouse.
Yes.
All right. Who else did you tell, and what kind of feedback did you get from people when you said the words that I would never have put together? I'm going to stop being a violinist and start being a pilot.
Right, that's kind of a crazy thing to say. They were all supportive. I told my friends and family, and I don't think anybody said I was crazy. They might have behind my back, I don't know, but they all were supportive of it. They just thought it was really cool.
Yeah,
I just
because
wanted
you,
to see how it would happen, so.
you picked the cool things. If you had said you were going to go into, house painting, they may have said something different.
They might have, yeah.
They might have said something different. So, yeah. So, what kind of things were you hoping would change in your life? Like, so thinking back to the way your life was when you were working for the symphony, when you were putting together these events and working with all the children, and you were thinking and you were deciding to change to being a pilot and a flight instructor. What were you thinking, were you hoping would change in your life as a result of making this career change?
Really, I was looking for consistency. So, as a musician, there's the gig culture or the gig mentality, which is totally fine. But me and my friends in the musician world, we talked about how there's feast and famine. There's times when you make a lot of money as a musician, but then you go through a couple of months where you don't make anything as a musician. So you have to plan very strategically how you spend your money throughout the year, because there may be times when you're not making any at all, and then other times you're making a bunch. So I really kind of wanted to flatten that out a little bit, to be consistent, because at the time I didn't have a kid, and one of my goals was I wanted to be able to have a kid and ensure that I could consistently provide for him if something were to go wrong. Because to me, there were too many variables. So if for some reason I got sick or something like that, something were to happen, and I'm relying on that gig mentality, let's say I miss that peak, I can no longer, now I'm going even longer without making money. Now, in the symphony, it was kind of a, I want to call it like a hourly gig. That's what I call hourly salary, if that makes sense. So I
I'm
was,
making a portmanteau of salary and hourly.
yeah, exactly. So I worked hourly at like a salary rate for a certain total number of hours. I don't remember what it was. So I could rely on that to some extent. So there was some stability there, but there was like a big portion of my income that came through doing a lot of gigs and stuff. So I was just kind of looking to even that out. So that was the first thing. The other thing was, at the time we had an apartment, and this apartment was like a diamond in the rough. It was amazing because it was $400 a month,
Oh
which is,
my
yeah, it was insane. And it was around 1,000 square feet, so it was huge as far as apartments go. And it was centrally located, basically downtown. It was amazing. So it helped us get ahead in life. And so we knew that if we were to ever buy a house, we're actually going to have to spend more on the cost of living to move out of an apartment, which is usually the other way around. So, but that was my goal: be consistent, be able to afford my own house to provide for having a kid, and then eventually have a kid. So.
So that's like a really grown up analysis of your life. It really was like you were leveling up from being somebody who could fly by the seat of their pants, like very gig oriented, to really pre-planning for a stable, consistent life. That's a pretty, I'm going to give younger you some props for having
Well,
that
thanks.
foresight to think about that. 'Cause I think it's hard for a lot of people to sort of see the instability and know what's coming with that kind of thing and how to make the jump. I think that was very, very good. So, what else might have changed from your day-to-day life when you went from being like schedule-wise and routine, from the job you had, which was concert-based, right? Like nights and weekends and
Yeah, nights and weekends, there's a lot of flexibility to it. So there's a lot of parallels between being a musician and being a pilot. So if you know
okay,
somebody
let's hear it.
who's,
Let's hear it.
yeah, if you know somebody who's thinking about making that switch, very easy to do. So, well, I won't say easy. There's a lot of things that carry over. So pilots, they fly, at least in the flight instructor world, we fly kind of around the clock. There's times when I'm flying, like last night I was out till 1 in the morning flying. And then tonight I'll be done by probably 7. So it varies depending on what we're trying to accomplish. Sometimes there's like nighttime requirements that we're trying to get in.
Okay.
So in terms of that carried straight over because being a musician is the same thing. I might be playing a wedding at 2 in the afternoon on a Saturday and then a concert Sunday evening or something. So that part's pretty similar. One of my musician friends, I'm going to quote her, she said, musicians in the military are one of the most disciplined industries you can get into. And I would also equate pilots into that because it's very similar. So in terms of how they approach things, when you meet some of the really high level classical musicians, they're very disciplined in terms of how they practice and they're consistently showing up. And it's just unreal when you meet some of these people that they're very good. If you bring that same mentality to how you approach becoming a pilot, you'll find a huge amount of success in that because we're big on being on time, doing things consistently the right way every time. A pilot and a classically trained musician are basically the same person if you were to break them down to their core components, I think.
That is the most amazing connection. I would never, if you had said to me before we started this, Amy, come up with things that musicians and pilots have in common, I would have been hard pressed to come up with what they are. But I see exactly what you're saying, that the skills that are behind it in taking responsibility for your action, hitting the timing things. I see it. I do see it, but I never would have guessed it. That's a really, really, really good thing. All right, so we are going to get to the final questions in a little bit, but I do want to ask you to think back to the younger version of you who was 14, 16 years old, the time when you were working at the airport on the summer gig, but also beginning to develop your music skills looking forward. If you were able to go back and give that version of you advice about jobs and things you were choosing, what do you think you might tell yourself?
That's a good question. I've never really thought about it.
Because it's not something you can actually do. So it's in some ways
Right.
it's a terrible question, but in other ways it's like, what have you learned that applies to people in an earlier state? Because it sounds from the outside, even though you point out the similarities, it does seem like a pretty big shift between two different parts of your personality.
Yeah, I think so. I think listen to people around you. I think I was doing it then too, but also like telling myself to believe it. So listen to what they have to say and be consistent, like continue being consistent and just kind of stick with it for the long haul. I don't think I would change the trajectory if that's kind of part of the question.
It wasn't, but it was going to be the next thing I was going to ask you. Like,
Yeah, I had a
are you
feeling I could kind
happy?
of sense
Yeah,
it.
right. It's that. That's good.
Because I think it played a part in making who I am now, like how why I am the way that I am now, being consistent the way I am. I think I could have probably done more of it. I think we always think we can do more. There's
Yeah.
times when I'm like, I could have done more of this or that, but
Well, that's always true, right? If you were to go back, you could always do more. As I try not to ask myself like the question, just as a person for me, am I doing the best I can do? Because we are always doing the best we can do at the time. It's just that we don't have the same context that we will have at other times. The day you get up and you have like a splitting sinus headache, that day that you get nothing done, that's the best you could do in that situation.
right.
If you look back at it, you're like, oh, I didn't do anything. It's like, yeah, it's not a helpful frame. So then you are happy that you pursued music as far as you did, had that experience and then made the change. Do you ever feel like did you ever feel any pressure like you've got to change now or the time is slipping away, that kind of thing?
I think so. When I was planning on switching careers to being a pilot, I could sense that now is the time to make that switch. If I'm going to make the switch, I need to do it now. But I think that's just kind of how I'm driven as a person individually. I'm very 5-year goal oriented,
Okay.
and I realize not everybody aligns with that or agrees with it, but that's fine. But for me, it works really well because the 5 years of being really 4 years of being in college, I took a gap year, so we'll rewind a little bit. graduated high school. I waited a year to see if music was something I wanted to do. Then I went to college.
Okay.
So that was about 5 years. Post college was about another 5 years of just kind of being a professional musician. And then I switched and I've been a pilot for about 5 years. So.
That is really interesting. So you have like a 5-year cycle of reinvention. You know what that reminds me of? It reminds me of when I was job hunting right after I graduated from high school, from college, sorry. And they would say, where do you see, they would ask this question, where do you see yourself in 5 years? And I always thought it was a very strange question because I was like, well, 5 years ago, I was in high school. I don't have a good framework for where I will be in 5 years. That's not what I said in the interview, but I've always hoped that people don't ask that question anymore to a, 22-year-old kid. It's like, I don't know. I was 17.
I don't think I knew back then either, but
Right.
I think it kind of naturally fell into that anyway, and it works for
It
me. So.
works. It absolutely works. All right. So now I'm going to ask you three rapid-fire questions, which are not really related to flying or music,
Okay.
I think. What is your favorite late night snack?
Popcorn, without a
Popcorn. All right,
doubt.
very good. What is the last movie you saw either in the theater or streaming at home or
Oh,
wherever?
I know what it is. I'm gonna have to look it up. I'm
Okay,
gonna
look it
look it
up.
up for
Look it
you.
up.
It's called The Watchers. I remembered it. It's on
The Watch
Netflix.
Watchers on Netflix. All right, very good. Are you a person who still goes to the theater or do you mostly stream?
I stream now. I've kind of started a little hobby of sort of building my own home theater.
Ah,
So
okay.
I built some DIY speakers and things like that. It sounds really, really good. So my joke is I don't have to go to the theater. It's at my house. So.
I sometimes I really enjoy the theater experience, and sometimes I just would rather stay at home where all my stuff is. And so there's okay. So what is one thing that you're afraid of that you are willing to admit on the show?
One thing that I'm afraid of. Oh, this is, I know the answer to that I'm not, basically that I'm not doing enough. We'll kind of circle back
Oh,
to that.
that
So,
does,
and
yeah.
I'll tell you where it comes from. I know exactly where it comes from. So years and years ago, I had a dream that a friend of mine and I were just, we were playing and we were kids, but it was almost like time and the dream was passing a lot faster. And you know how in school they had stations where you could go and do different things. And it was just kind of free choice. We in the dream, we could go play at this station or we could go learn something at any of the other stations. We played for a little bit and then he wanted to go start learning stuff. And at the time, who I was in the dream, I just wanted to continue playing. And as time progressed, he ended up being successful and moving on with life. And to me, that kind of equated to a nightmare. When I woke up, I realized I didn't want to be stuck, not trying to better myself, basically, is what it came out to, and just kind
Yeah.
of becoming stagnant as a human being. So ever since then, this has probably been, I might have been 10 when I had the dream. That's been a really long time ago. I kind of promised myself that I would try to never become stagnant. So,
Always pushing yourself to better yourself. Yeah, that sounds to me very much like an anxiety dream. That like if I'm stuck
it
at the
probably
station,
is.
other people are moving forward. I can't move forward. I have this fatal flaw that I can't move forward. And you clearly are a person who is always moving forward, picking something that was a very high mark, professional musician and then pilot and pilot instructor. Those are two big things. All right. That's it, Nathaniel Ramsey. Thank you so much for being a great guest today on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening today. I hope that you enjoy the show. And before I go, I want to encourage you to become a bigger part of the conversation. Obviously, subscribe wherever you're listening to the show. Listen to more episodes. That'd be great. Obvi again, please write a review and tell your friends about the show. That truly is a great help for getting the show in front of new people. Okay, but more fun for you yourself. Head over to imperfectadulting.com and join the email community. You'll get some free stuff right away, and that way you'll begin to get the emails about the podcast. This includes the links for the special offers from the guests, and it's the only way to get that. Also, if you aren't in the mood to listen, I actually include an article directly in those emails. Whee! Now, if you love this and you crave more time with me, Amy, as a coach, a mentor, or just adult to your adult, numero uno, check out The Village. If you have a story you want to share with the listeners, I'd love to hear from you. I have an open application. Just let me know you want it. And that's a wrap for today. Until next time, remember, the journey is the destination. Ralph Waldo Emerson said that, not me. Well, until just now, I did just say it. But what I want you to hear today is that if your adulting journey isn't going the way you expected, that may not mean that you're lost. It may just mean that you're on your way. This is Amy Stone, signing off. The Imperfect Adulting Podcast is created and produced by Amy Stone and Amy Says So. Anything expressed on this show is offered as entertainment, and the views of the guests may not always represent the ideas and viewpoints of the host. That's me. Amy does not intend or hold herself out to provide professional advice or recommendations of any kind. In the end, you and you alone need to make those kinds of decisions based on your personal and individual situation, needs, circumstances, and comfort level.